You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Everybody, welcome to the latest Red Reporter podcast. I'm Eric Roseberry, tonight joined by Wick Terrell. Wick, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am doing well and making his podcast debut this season. Derek Grimes in Indianapolis, how are you?
Oh, I'm fantastic. Happy to be your stand-in BK this week.
Yeah, BK is off gallivanting around Ireland.
Yeah, he's in Ireland at the moment. I guess they did England for a couple days beforehand. Cut a game at Anfield and got a Liverpool win, I think, when he was there. They're surfing around the north coast of Ireland at this point. I'm thoroughly jealous.
Yeah, I think we're all jealous seeing the pictures, and we're also jealous that he has missed the Reds losing 7 out of 8 games. So, general thoughts on how that's gone.
They gave up, 29 runs in 3 games against Milwaukee, and that means they are now officially 1-6 against Milwaukee so far, and obviously the Brewers are this year being pretty much in a similar spot as the Reds, being rebuild central guys. Just slapped from this sudden emergency Mary Queen. I didn't think there was a whole lot there that suggested they'd be that much better than the Reds at this point, but it sure as hell looked like they were head and shoulders above where the Reds were when they played each other the last 2 weeks, which was thoroughly discouraging considering that, you know, you never want to go into a series in St. Louis given the last decade of history between the Reds and Cardinals, fresh off losing 7 out of 8, but that's where they are.
Go for it, Derek.
Yeah, it was a bit disappointing, or has been a bit disappointing to me to see how the Reds have fared against Milwaukee, considering they should be, at least in theory or on theory and on paper, around the same kind of stage of their rebuild as the Reds are. Actually, the Reds probably should be ahead of them as far as that goes. And then to go and have, you know, two series right off the bat against Milwaukee and just get bludgeoned. It's disheartening a little bit. The Reds will be okay. We didn't expect the hot start to last, I think, the entire season. I mean, maybe you did, maybe I'm as optimistic as they come, but yeah. That was, you know, that would have been even more optimistic than I was. But then just to get it handed to them against the Brewers for, you know, 6 out of 7 games is just, I don't know, it's disheartening, it's disappointing, but, you know, they'll pick it back up.
To be fair, the Reds don't have Eric Thames, and he's apparently the greatest baseball player ever born now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I mean, I look up at where the Reds are right now, and basically they've got 2/3 of their team in pretty good shape. The bullpen has been asked to pitch more innings so far this year than any other bullpen in baseball. I worried about it today, it hasn't just been the quantity of what they've done that's been good. Like, the quality they provided has been excellent. They're the fraction of a strikeout per inning away from leading all of Major League Baseball in strikeouts per 9 innings. They are the best bullpen in baseball
hand over fist inducing ground balls. And so for a bullpen that's been tasked with picking up the scraps, and given where they were this time last year, the bullpen's been excellent. The Reds offense, they've hit 31 home runs, which is top five in baseball. I think it's actually tied for second in baseball. They've got a top 10 OPS in all of baseball. They've scored, I think, the fifth or sixth most runs in all of baseball. Three through seven has been rock solid awesome in terms of production from the lineup from the regulars. It just comes down to starting pitchers, and that's the one part that hasn't just not worked out. It's been awful so far. And you feel like if ever there was anything that you would hope to be able to sort out and or depend upon, it would be starting pitching. And the fact that that's the one piece of where the Reds are, especially over this, you know, particular slump of late, that's the one that worries me the most. And I mean, Zach Buchanan from the Inquirer wrote about it this morning. The cavalry isn't coming. There's not like that one, for instance, this time last year when the pitching staff was struggling so much, you could point and say, hey, we've got Cody Reed in AAA. We've got Robert Stevenson in AAA. Sal Romano is kicking ass in AA. We've got, you know, you name it. We've got all these prospects. Now they're all up, and especially with the news that Sal Romano is now on the DL in Louisville with shoulder inflammation, there's not somebody else you can turn to even mentally and say, hey, well, when this guy gets up there, everything's going to be good. We're waiting on two guys coming off elbow injuries, and Anthony Scafani and Homer Bailey, and Brandon Finnegan coming off a shoulder injury. And those are pretty much the only quote-unquote reinforcements they have, which means they've just got to sort it out. And that's the one scary part to me for all of this, because you can't even lean on a third party looking forward in all this. It's kind of what you see is what you get. And I'm interested to see how that plays out over this next month.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I actually brought up the Bats roster before we started this just to check it out. And, you know, we've already seen a fairly, a common shuttle between for bullpen guys. So, you know, Barrett Aston has been up 14 times, it seems like, already. But looking through the list, you know, there's a lot of bullpen help. I mean, they can work with an 11 or 12 man bullpen if they want, but there's not anybody that you would point to and say, yeah, they could turn to that guy to come in and, you know, start a game and pitch five or six innings. I mean, and I just found out, and I look at somebody like Rob Wooten, like, yeah, like you probably could if you needed to, but he's on the 7-day DL. So, you know, John Moscott is on the 60-day DL, doesn't have any, you know, elbow ligaments left. And then who knows what's going on with Sal Romano now. So I don't – Jackson Stevens, is, you know, he's in his first couple of starts at AAA. It's not like you can do that. There's just not anybody there unless you wanted to stretch them out and say, hey, give it a shot. But that doesn't seem like it would work any better than what we're doing now anyway. So we'll see a lot of these guys. I'm thinking of, you know – we've already seen Barrett Aston and Lisavento Bonilla, which I think I just overpronounced it like Tom Brenneman, but we'll see. You know, we've seen those guys, and you know, I think chances are we'll probably see Austin Bryce in the bullpen eventually. Alejandro Chazin, Lewis Coleman, Lucas Litke, those guys we'll probably see before the season's over, but not as a member of the starting rotation. And there's just not a lot of guys, unless they skip. I mean, do you put Tyler Molly in August or even September? Do you put him in the starting rotation? I don't see it, but there's just not those guys there in the Louisville rotation anymore. It is what it is.
Yeah. Well, and I'm curious to know what you guys think about this. So, yeah, in some ways it's exciting the rebuild's done, but now I think there's this realization like, yeah, it's done. The trades are done. Like, outside of this draft pick this year, there's not a huge piece coming in. Do you think this could lead to Michael Lorenzen getting another shot in the rotation?
I mean, that's the one wild card in all of this. And, you know, I feel like Lorenzen never had a grand chance to completely fail as a starter before ending up in the bullpen. His was more a matter of timing and circumstance when he came back, fighting the forearm injury that he had early last year and then a bout of mono. I almost wonder if it's the mono that sent him to the bullpen last year more so than the arm injury that he had, considering in 2015 he was in the starting rotation. And so much has been compared about where Anthony DeSclafani's arm injury, in terms of his elbow, forearm, whatever it is similar to what Lorenzen did last year. If it was the mono, which is the stamina issue, which initially sent him back there, maybe that is where they turn from all this. Because aside from that, you look up and it's Luis Castillo, who is in Double A, and they picked up in the Dan Straley deal, who has pitched quite well, but again, he's in Double A for the same reason that you saw Ariel Hernandez brought up and pitched great, but he got sent back down A because he had to pitch in three-thirds innings kind of on the spot and wasn't going to be available for the next day. And B, he's only thrown eight innings above A ball ever. So when you're getting to the point where those are the guys that you're talking to or talking about trying to come up and not just be the future, but try to emphatically take the 27 rotation towards the finish line. That's a tall task. That's a lot to ask. And I feel like with Lorenzen, maybe he's the guy you turn to and lean on. Unless there's something that they knew more about from last year than we really heard. You know, with Raisel Iglesias, I feel like the management and the guys in the dugout, like Brian Price and whatnot, talk specifically about how they were worried about him holding up as a starter. You haven't heard that with Lorenzen, but still, you haven't heard a whole lot of suggestion that he might move back into that more extended role. I think it's kind of the option that you can turn to at this point. Whether or not that's a positive or not, I don't know. I mean, again, you look up at what Lorenzen did in 2015 when he was in the starting rotation. He wasn't great. And we've talked, at least kicked around on the blog off and on about turning towards just using a lot of guys in 2 to 3 inning stints to get you through the rest of the season, since there's so many starters / former starters / hopefully future starters that are in the bullpen. But the fact is, guys like Robert Stephenson and Cody Reed, even, who are kind of those swing guys that you hope can go back to the rotation, while they've had some success in the bullpen, obviously Reed more than Stephenson, every time you ask them to pitch innings 1 through 3, something happens. There's something with them. So those 3 innings aren't the same as innings 5, 6, and 7 for them coming out of the bullpen. So I don't know where Brian Price goes with this, actually. I don't envy his position trying to deal with the starting rotation in such disrepair. But the fact is, like, there's no name out there that we're not seeing that's going to come in and save the day. It's just going to have to be a continued shuffle until they can sort it out.
Who else, I mean, as far as to Eric's point about, the rebuild basically being over. So, I mean, take that to its logic, like its conclusion. Who's left for the Reds to trade? Zach Cozart, obviously. I mean, that's number one. But that's not going to bring you likely. I mean, I guess if he keeps hitting like he's hitting, like, that's not going to bring back a guy that you're going to be super excited about for this year or maybe even next year. Not that this year really matters anyway, but you know what I mean? And other than, looking into somebody like Jesse Winker coming up and just tearing the cover off the ball, which makes Adam Duvall or Scott Schebler expendable at that point. But then again, they're not exactly tearing the cover off the ball. So that's not going to bring back something that I don't know. There's not a lot. The cupboards are bare at this point, as far as what you can look to send out to bring in reinforcements. We are at an end as far as bringing back legitimate talent that's going to help in the foreseeable future. If the idea for the front office was 2018, Cody Reed, Robert Stephenson, Amir Garrett, who's done very well, last start notwithstanding, Ricky Davis, they're going to have to step up at some point in time. Some of them, I think, will. I am beginning to get a little more worried than I have been about Robert Stephenson, but I don't know. I mean, where are you guys at with Robert Stephenson at this point? I was not as worried after last year, you know, being it was his first go round in the big leagues, but it just doesn't seem to be getting there. And he's only 24 years old. I get that. But even out of Cody Reed has success out of the bullpen. You know, he might get shelled when he starts, but he's having success out of the bullpen. Robert Stevenson is really struggling. On a 1 to 10 scale, I mean, where are we at with Robert Stevenson as far as how worried we are?
I think at this point, if he makes the roster, I fully expect him to be in the bullpen. Maybe it's a little early to give up on him as a starter, but as of now, I'm not sure I see that in the cards for him in the future. So maybe a solid bullpen piece, which might not be a bad thing.
Yeah, with Stevenson, to look up at a guy who has a curveball that when it's right is it falls off the table. A fastball that when he is feeling right and in the groove and stretched out fully can still hit 97, even if it doesn't hit 99 like it used to. For me, when a guy has those two pitches and is still struggling as much as he is, it's something mechanical. And when you watch him pitch, he crouches more in his windup than any pitcher I really remember the Reds having in recent years. And I'm sure there's probably a big league comp somewhere that I just don't recognize because I haven't watched it as much. But when I see that, it's almost like he's trying to stand up when he throws as opposed to trying to bear down when he throws, if that makes sense. And I just wonder if there's some mechanical motion way to tweak his delivery, to tweak the way he sets up, whether it's on a different side of the mound, whether it's pitching from the stretch, whether it's slowing his motion down the way that Johnny Cueto did when he added the wiggle. I don't know, but with his arm, the arm is sound and the arm is talented. And when I see that, I have a hard time just bailing on him at the moment. But the fact is, something about the way he throws the ball has got to change because it's not fooling people and it's not maximizing what the rest of his natural talent can provide, which is an arm that can throw the ball that fast and make a ball break that much. I don't know if it takes – I mean, he's been through the system. He's been in the system for, 6 years now. He's seen every pitching coach and roving instructor and had Brian Price in the system working with him since the day he was drafted. Price is back to the pitching coach. I don't know what it is, but I feel like there's got to be something that gets tweaked there because the way he's delivering it, I don't think the way he's pitching right now is a testament to what his true talent is. And I feel like he's almost wasting it by not being able to kind of refine it the way that everybody hopes he will. But I feel like that's not one of those things. It's just a tweak at this point. I feel like it's got to be a full scale change of the way he goes about delivering pitches over the plate because his control's been off not just this year, but the last 3 years on every step. And he can't get by just on hoping that it's guys who are going to swing at stuff that doesn't hit the zone. He's reached the point of having to hit his spots. And that's what he can't do at this point. And I don't know. I don't think he's a give up at this point by any means. He's not a Nick Howard, rest his soul. But he is somebody who I think needs a full revamp. And maybe it's time to send him back to AAA and just kind of just go over everything else from the start again.
Sounds like we need to make an impromptu call to friend of the podcast, Chris Welsh, see what's going on. He loves those impromptu calls, right?
Yeah.
He's not busy tonight.
Oh. But I mean, I do remember like who was it? It was Edison Volquez, right? The year before he came to the Reds in the Josh Hamilton trade, went from being a top prospect on the fringe of the majors, sent all the way back to A ball in part because of off the field issues, but also in part because of his wildness and the fact that he couldn't repeat a delivery that was worth a damn. And he went back down there and made a lot of mechanical changes. And suddenly was good again because his arm could always throw 98 with a lot of movement. He just couldn't do it two times out of three. So I'm not suggesting sending him back to Daytona and see what the hell happens. But still, you got to think there's a way to take an arm that's that talented and get more out of it than what the Reds are getting right now.
Absolutely. And while we're talking about this just for a second, I do want to and I'm sure he's listening because the Red Reporter podcast is, you know, nationally syndicated and all, but Wandy Peralta has been absolutely, and we're talking about 10 innings and I realize that, but he's been absolutely fantastic out of the bullpen and what he's been asked to do this year. And I think we'd be doing him a disservice if in talking about like, oh, who's going to come up and who's going to step up. Like, he's not going to be a starter probably, but he could definitely take Blake Wood's position as a high leverage bullpen guy. And even Michael Lorenzen, if Lorenzen comes up to and they want him to start. So I think, you know, I just wanted to just mention that Peralta has been fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, he's looked great. I'm glad you mentioned Lorenzen again. I've been thinking about him a lot. So April, first four appearances, doesn't give up any runs. April 10th, great outing. But then he has these quotes, and you probably heard the quotes. I work like the best. I have the stuff like the best. Why wouldn't I think what I'm doing is best? And then he was also quoted as saying, I don't try to not give up any runs. I know I'm not going to give up any runs. And since that quote, through the magic of baseball reference, he has an 11.37 ERA and 6.1 innings, and teams are hitting .367 off of him. So we got to fix that.
Yeah, my first reaction to that is, A, I love the hell out of his confidence. I feel like that's the kind of thing that a guy in his position has to have, especially if to kind of circle back a little bit, the Reds asked him to be a reliever. They've pigeonholed him into being a reliever since last year. When you're a starter, you know you're going to give up runs. That's just how it goes. Your job is less about not giving up runs as much as it is about trying to get through two-thirds of the game with your team in a position to win. You've got to manage stuff. When you're told you're supposed to be a lockdown reliever, your goal is, and your mentality's got to be, I can't give up a run. So I appreciate his assertion there, especially with the fact that he can throw 100 miles an hour and has a slider that's sick when it's on. But the second reaction I have is he hadn't faced the Cubs yet. He'd pitched against the Phillies and a Pirates team that looks like it's a disaster already, and a Cardinals team that was struggling to get out of its own way coming out of spring training. You face the Cubs. He came in a driving rainstorm with a 5-2 lead in the first game of the Cubs-Reds series in Great American with Raisel Iglesias not available, and served up a meatball that Anthony Rizzo hit for a 3-run home run that turned what could have been winning 2 out of 3 in that Cubs series into an initial loss and into having to struggle to get a win out of the series on Sunday. Lorenzen's good. Like, he's a really, really good reliever who could be more than that with an arm that's special. I don't fault him one bit for saying that and being that assertive, because I think that's kind of how you have to be when you're where he is, which is a guy who hasn't even earned a multi-year contract yet, is still pre-arb eligible, and had a forearm issue that probably scared the hell out of him this time last year. But the fact is, yeah, he's still got to prove more than what he's proven so far to come out and basically claim a Mariano Rivera incarnate at this point.
Yeah, it's been tough for him since those quotes. And that was after the Pittsburgh game, I believe, the three innings pitched when Finnegan came out. And since then, of course, you know, it didn't help that the next time he went out there, I mean, after pitching for three innings, he was off for several games, but he comes back out against Milwaukee. And I'm just looking at the line, and he pitched one inning in that game, in the seventh, it looks like, and he gave up 4 earned runs, and I imagine they were all Eric Thames. So I don't know that for sure, but, you know, that's probably what happened. And otherwise, you know, that Chicago game where he blew the game, I guess, with 2 outs in the 9th inning. Otherwise, it's been okay. And I know we're talking about a very, very small sample size. So taking out three innings out of that 6.1 inning, I mean, that's, we're taking out half the sample there, but I don't know. I think he'll be, and I agree with Wick. I don't know that I would expect him to say anything else other than, yes, I'm the best and I'm going to be the best for a guy in his position. But I think it's been really unfortunate how it's broken down for him since then. Definitely. But I don't know. I have faith in him, whether it be, I wouldn't mind seeing him. And like I said, with Peralta being as well, you know, pitching as well as he's pitched, I wouldn't mind seeing them give him another shot if they think that his arm can handle it, more so than Iglesias, just because they've tried Iglesias in the rotation several times and it never seems to work out with his shoulder or his elbow or whatever the ailment tends to be. And Iglesias is on record saying that he kind of likes being the quote-unquote closer or late-inning guy or whatever it is. So, and Lorenzen's saying, yeah, I'm going to be back in the starting rotation. It's not a matter of, you know, if, but when. So that's the right attitude to have, too. And these guys are ultra-competitive. I can't imagine competing on this level and not looking that way, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we've talked so much about the pitching. I feel like we need to give props to something. Wick, you mentioned this before we started recording. Cincinnati currently has three players with seven home runs apiece: Adam Duvall, Scott Schebler, Joey Votto. And other than Milwaukee, who have an Eric Thames excuse, have the second most home runs in the National League. How are you guys feeling about the offense right now?
The American League leader in home runs, I think it's tied by several people, is seven. And the Reds have three of those. So obviously the Reds are not in the American League. But again, seven home runs through 22 games, extrapolated over a season. That's, you're pushing a 50 home run pace from the guys who hit pretty routinely third, fourth, and sixth in the Reds' current lineup. And those three haven't even been the Reds' best hitters so far this year. Eugenio Suarez has been he's been the breakout candidate that most of us hoped we'd see this year and more. Obviously, he's done it with the glove too, but with the bat, he's been fantastic. And then there's Zach Cozart, who I think until his second at bat during it's Thursday, during Wednesday afternoon's game, until his third at bat of the game, he was leading the majors in batting average and was 12th in walks and had missed, or at least set it out, two, if not three games because of a sore wrist, if not other ailments, or just daily rest. So guys who are hitting third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh in this lineup have been awesome. They really have been awesome, and that's the reason why the Reds are tied for second in home runs. They're top six in baseball in runs scored. They're top 10 in OPS. Their offense has been good. It's been good. I mean, that's ultimately as much as you can really ask for from any team, much less a team that's as in flux as the Reds are. The caveat being that Billy Hamilton and Jose Peraza at the top of the order haven't really given much of anything with the bat. They've been valuable once they've gotten to first base on those few occasions that they have. You know, both I think have at least six stolen bases at this point. So they've been able to provide value once they got there. But aside from that, whether or not Brian Price chooses to shake up the batting order going forward, it does seem like he's got a core that is heating up and looks the part of being a big league, you know, not just a big league caliber, but upper echelon caliber offense throughout the middle of the order. And we're saying this with Joey Votto with a BABIP under 200 and an OBP of just 330 right now. So you know that's going to continue to go up as well. I think this Reds offense has a chance if everybody stays healthy and they continue to kind of evolve the way that they have been, or if Scooter Gennett continues to just show up and hit home runs and drive in runs freakishly off the bench. The offense can be really good this year. And that's something I think that Reds fans can get excited about, regardless of where the starting pitching situation is. Considering so many of the moves and all the pieces they brought in, you don't look up, you know, aside from Zach Cozart, there's not a part of this offense right now that looks like it's not going to be part of the next 2 to 3 years. And that's something to kind of rally around and be excited about as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and all that with Devin Mesoraco's back this weekend, so we can get into both of these things now. if he's anything close to what he was last time he was full time, they really could have something here on offense.
Yeah, I am excited to see Devin Mesoraco back in a Reds uniform. That being said, I'm not expecting a whole lot other than just being happy that he is, you know, wearing a Reds jersey and out there again, because it's been so long since we've seen it. And even the last time, you know, we did see it, it wasn't any good. And it wasn't even in his normal capacity, I guess, when we were watching in 2015, basically, when he was basically the glorified DH, and they wouldn't put him on the DL because they had like American League games coming up or whatever. You know, he's back, and by all accounts, he's healthy. They wouldn't be putting him out there if he wasn't healthy. So when he comes back, and it might not be Friday. I don't know that he'll be starting the game at catcher tomorrow, but sometime this weekend, we'll probably see him start at catcher, and that's exciting. And we know what he can do if he's right. It's been a long time since he's done it. But then I'm looking at Tucker Barnhart's line, and for some reason it always seems like when I'm watching Tucker Barnhart that he is hitting better than he is. But he's got a 61 OPS plus right now. And I have a hard time believing that if Devin Mesoraco is right and is actually back, that at the end of the year he won't have something better than a 61 OPS plus. It might not be the 2014 Mesoraco that was an all-star and got MVP votes, but I think he'll do better than a 61 OPS plus. He'll do better than a 300 slugging percentage, I would think. And then Stuart Turner has actually been a little bit better, obviously, in less time. But I'm excited to see Devin Mesoraco back, with the caveat being that I have basically no expectations for him.
Yeah, when it comes to Mesoraco, I you mentioned his 40-plus day stint on the roster while not actually being healthy enough to play. And he's going to be probably at least shoehorned initially into that kind of role as he kind of makes his first foray back into big league play. They're going to hold on to Stuart Turner for, my guess is, at least 2 weeks, because that's going to be enough, or it's going to take at least that amount of time for Mesoraco to start, not play the next day, get a pinch hit appearance, start again, not play, get a pinch hit appearance, to at least give the Reds visual evidence of what it is that he can do. And, you know, it's hard for him to have regular enough playing time to prove what it is he can and can't do, while the Reds also have to legitimately, hedge for the future. Because if Mesoraco comes back and can't squat, can't catch back-to-back days, isn't the hitter that he once was, you're talking about going into a 2018 season that, you know, COO Phil Castellini is on record of saying that's when we expect to be good again. And if your catching options at that point are still Stuart Turner, Devin Mesoraco, and Tucker Barnhart, and Mesoraco doesn't show you anything, and Tucker's got a 61 OPS plus, then you got to make moves at that point, because that means the catching position is not in a very good state. And so I think the Reds, I wrote about it a little bit today, and was still struggling trying to define exactly everything I was talking about, in large part because it's hard to define what to expect out of Devin Mesoraco after, you know, hell, he signed a 4-year, $28 billion extension after the 2014 season. That's over halfway done, and he's hit no home runs, hit 158, and has 3 RBIs in the entire playing time he's put forward on that at the big league level. So with the Reds, they've got to give him a chance to show them what he's got while not trying to hold him up to the contract they signed him to in the first place, if that makes sense. And I don't know how you do that without giving him regular playing time. But then again, you also don't want to risk further injury. So it's I've not envied Brian Price for much of his tenure as manager, because he's been tasked with a lot of stuff that has been really hard to sort out. But the catching situation with these three guys in, that's one I don't know how he's going to pull off. And I'm interested as all hell to find out how it sorts itself out in the coming months.
Yeah, I will say this about Tucker, at least for early in the season. He just from times I've watched, started to notice like he was doing a great job not letting balls get past him, whether that was wild pitches, whether that was blocking balls in the dirt. I know catcher defense is hard to quantify, but by DRS, he's having easily the best defensive season of his career. It's early. And Zach Buchanan's already written about how successful he's been this season throwing runners out. So while he hasn't been offensively what you'd like him to be, it's hard not to admit that defensively he's provided some significant value for Cincinnati.
As more importance is put on that particular part of the catcher position, that was something he wanted to focus on as well. And obviously that's something that takes a lot of time, and the numbers there are still difficult. But the fact that he noticed that that's something that he wasn't graded well on last year and something that he wanted to improve on, it makes me think that that's something he's actively trying to do well as well. And given how good he is at the rest of the aspect of, you know, being kind of the captain of the pitching staff, something tells me that's something he's going to scale out well on, or at least improved upon from last year too. And yeah, with Tucker, I mean, he was an eighth or a 10th round draft pick when they picked him up. He's not somebody who you would look up initially and say, hey, this guy's catcher of the future material. He wasn't, 6'5" like Tyler Stevenson and imposing. And he wasn't, he didn't bring to the table enough to be drafted eighth overall like Devin Mesoraco. But what Tucker has been able to provide for the Reds through Mesoraco's injuries and the fact that he's got 3 years at least of team control going forward, he really has turned out to be one of those great draft pick finds that I think the Reds should, well, as far as I'm concerned, they should hang their hat on what they found in him, because he truly has proven to be, at worst, a catcher who deserves to play half the time. And that's what they've got as a luxury, fortunately, while Mesoraco has been coming back.
Yeah, I think Tucker – I mean, I'll be the – I'm a big Tucker fan. Yeah, I mean, you guys know that from the stuff that I've written on the blog. Yeah, that's right. And I don't have any thoughts that I want to share about Brownsburg in general, but I went to a bar there actually less than a year ago, and you can still smoke in it, which I thought was weird. But I don't know, it was weird. But I like Tucker a lot, and I think he's definitely valuable. And I think it'd be one thing, I guess. And I need to look this up for sure. But it would be one thing, or in 2018, say the Reds were good again. It would be one thing if he was their Ryan Hannigan, you know, who was never, was breaking the scoreboard with home runs or anything like that. He got on base at a good clip and handled the pitching staff very well, a young pitching staff at that point in 2012. But I guess, and I guess it would be different if you didn't have Billy Hamilton on the roster, who isn't, OBPing less than 300. And you can only hide so many guys, I guess is what I'm trying to say, on offense. I think Tucker, he's been fantastic defensively. He seems to be handling the pitching staff well this season and last season. He can only do so much, obviously, but he is composed. He does a lot of things very well. So I don't want to make it out to be like I'm down on him by any stretch. I always think that he's playing better maybe than the numbers would show, which is probably a good thing. For him, but it's just like if the Reds are going to contend in 2018, I just don't see a way forward with Tucker Barnhart as your starting catcher, unless Jose Peraza and Billy Hamilton and Adam Duvall and Scott Schebler and Jesse Winker, some combination of those can come in and do something at the plate to where Tucker batting eighth would be okay.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And well, before we wrap up, one other thing we wanted to bring up, again, Wick, you mentioned this. It has been a rough go of it for the Reds over the last week and a half, lost 7 out of 8. And as you brought to our attention, somewhat sadly, May looks like it could be a rough go for the Reds. It starts off pretty smooth. Pittsburgh doesn't look great. San Francisco, Bumgarner's out. They're 8-15. I didn't realize that until I just looked at it. But then after that, you've got the Yankees. I'm really excited about seeing Aaron Judge at Great American Ballpark. You got the Cubs, you got the Rockies who are in first, you got the Indians, you got the Phillies who are on their way up. Toronto's a little down, but if they figure it out, it definitely looks like May could be
they'll be entering May off of a three-game series in St. Louis, which obviously the Reds over the last decade have been awful in St. Louis, despite the fact that they won the initial series there, first week of the season, which if anything might – given the demons that are in charge of St. Louis baseball, might mean we're set up to get serious retribution if they go back there this weekend. But yeah, it's a brutal May. And the fact that they're going into it with Brandon Finnegan on the DL, DeSclafani and Homer Bailey not back on the front end of their projections, which is unfortunate. AAA help and Sal Romano hitting the DL today. Basically, it's one of those things where you look up and say, hey, what they have on the roster right now is what they're going to have to roll into this, not a murderer's row per se, but a really dang tough stretch. And, it's nice to look up and be able to prognosticate and say, hey, these guys haven't gotten it done, but these guys are waiting in the wings and are going to come up and help them. There's not a lot of help there. Pretty much what we're going to hope for is that Tim Edelman can continue to be a competent starting pitcher, which he has done for most of his big league appearances, despite the fact that his peripherals and his minor league history suggest otherwise. That Bronson Arroyo and Scott Feldman can hold up at a combined, 75 years old? Who knows what else? That guys like Robert Stevenson can pick up innings and not walk three guys every time they go out on the mound. And the fact of the matter is, it's less about being able to project what this Reds team is and hoping that the guys that are young, and it's one of the youngest, if not the youngest roster in all of baseball, can turn the corner soon enough to make 2017 a productive year. And I think if any month is going to kind of define that, I think May is that month, because they are playing a lot of high-profile teams, some of which have gotten off to slow starts. But still, you talk about Cardinals, Pirates, Giants, Yankees, Giants, first place Rockies that are surging right now. A Blue Jays team that was in the playoffs last year that'll probably have Josh Donaldson back by the time they play each other. They've got a lot to prove, and going into St. Louis on losing 7 out of 8 in a row, mostly to a Milwaukee team they would have hoped to beat, isn't exactly the best launching point to do so.
I think it's doubtful that after the St. Louis series, they've got a 9-game homestand. So yeah, hopefully they get comfortable with, Pittsburgh is, I don't know if they're as bad as they seemed to be the last time that the Reds played them, but they've got him at home. And if San Francisco is still kind of stumbling at, next weekend, they got them at home. But then you go Yankees, even though that's at home, AL team that you've never seen, good luck. And then you go on the road with San Francisco and then into Wrigley. and then, like you said, with the first place Rockies coming in, it's not – in the mountains out there in Wickland, but I don't know if that makes much of a difference between the short field or the thin air, but and then the American League champions Indians coming in, splitting the home and home as they do for, I'm assuming that's the Ohio Cup portion of the schedule. It's rough. It's a rough schedule. I mean, I don't know if Toronto's going to be any good, but it's still an American League ballpark that they don't play in ever. And that matters. It's going to be rough. Hopefully you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe some of the guys pick it up. You know, Scott Schebler seems to be on his way up, even though maybe Evan Ball seems to be on his way down. Maybe that evens out by the middle of May, and they're both on one. I can't imagine those two guys being on the same, you know, Jay Bruceian hot streak. I mean, it would be balls flying out of the park everywhere, which would be really exciting. And maybe we get that in May, you know, kind of a May Bruce situation. But it's going to be a rough month. It has the potential to be a rough month. Hopefully some guys can figure it out. It's fun. We're in April with still a rebuilding team, and we're looking ahead saying, like, oh, you know, where are all these games that they can win, and all of these, you know, reinforcements that could come up, and these guys need to start playing well, and it's April. I mean, we could do this podcast again in a month and be like, oh, hey, you know, Scott Schebler has hit 10 home runs this month, you know, or Adam Duvall for that matter, or, oh, hey, you know, Joey Votto is, you know, playing like the MVP Joey Votto again because he's Joey Votto and he's awesome. And, you know, Billy Hamilton has stolen however many bases. You know, there's just a lot of variables that that we haven't let play out through the first month of the season. It's fun to talk about, you know, what needs to be better, but there's still a lot of season left to go, and it's exciting. And them showing that had the potential to be a good team through the first, what, three or four series this year, I think it's going to be an exciting year.
Indeed. Oh, anything else we need to cover before we wrap up tonight, guys?
I feel like we haven't seen the best of Jose Peraza yet. We haven't seen the best of Billy Hamilton yet. And there's a lot of the guys who have been starting games that you look up and say, we haven't seen the best of yet either. Unlike previous years, the Reds have made all of these roster moves and debuted so many guys, but have made a point a couple times. They haven't had to cut or designate anybody yet. Like, these are all where the Reds are in this rebuild is they've got 40 guys, and they're using all 40 of them. I think there's only three or four guys who are on the 40-man roster who haven't made a big league debut with the Reds to date. That's a product of where the rebuild is, which is it's a sorting process, but they've got a lot of really talented guys. And as Derek mentioned, there are 7 to 10 to 12 guys you could look up a month from now and say, hey, May was when it clicked. May was when Jose Peraza hit 350 again. May was when Billy Hamilton finally got things going and stole 20 bases. You know, May was when Cody Reed moved back to the rotation and finally figured it out. There's a lot to hope for and look forward to that doesn't seem like a defined closed book yet. And it's a byproduct of being in the middle of a reboot. You got to hope for some of this stuff. But the fact is, some of it's going to have emerged, and maybe it's Amir Garrett shrugging off his most recent terrible start and hearkening back to the first three starts he made, all of which were really, really, really damn impressive. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that you look up in 2019 and you will say, hey, a lot of that might have happened against these really good teams in May of 2017. And that's what we got to wait for. So
I will say possibly one of the reasons we're wrapping up right now, when we started this podcast, the Milwaukee Bucks trailed the Raptors by 18. They just took a 2-point lead, and it's been really hard recording with that happening in the background. So we got to get to our TVs.
Well, yeah, Masahiro Tanaka is about to throw the first complete game by a Yankees pitcher in Fenway since 2002 when Mike Mussina did it. So yeah, I'm watching that, but I'm going to flip over to the Bucks game for sure because I want to see the Greek Freak.
Wow.
What, no NFL draft for you guys? You don't want to see some names being big called off of a card or a teleprompter or whatever it is? Yeah, big guys in awkward suits, you know, hugging Roger Goodell, big bear hugs.
That does sound fun. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to this latest Red Reporter podcast. I want to encourage you to go to Red Reporter. Check it out. We have got coverage all season long from the Reds farm system through daily game recaps and previews. So there's a lot going on over there. Make sure you check it out. Subscribe to this in iTunes. Rate and review if you get a chance.
Peace out, guys.
And we will be back next week with another episode. Talk to you guys later.